Hunt, hunt, hunt.
All Packers, all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Brought to you by Exterior Pros. Ready to tackle your home improvement project this year? Exterior Pros and Baths is here to help you score big with quality home exterior and shower upgrades. Visit extpros.com. Also brought to you by Lakeland Supply. Lakeland Supply is in business to make your business better. Set up a free packaging and supply chain assessment at lakelandsupply.com.
Let's get right to Jason Wilde this morning. Good morning, Jason. How are you doing today?
I'm good, everybody. How are you?
Good. Chewy's back, filling us in on his 4th of July. How's your list going? The list that you have been pushing out every day. Where are we at on the list?
I believe 13 is posted this morning, and as everyone likes to say, it is on brand for me that I'm weaseling my way into having more names on the list than 20 of them. as I put Dontavian Wicks and Jaden Reed together. Which is both, you know, look, these guys, they're like brothers. I mean, they really are. And I love their kind of origin story as Packers. They actually met at the Senior Bowl. They both had really strong Senior Bowl performances. We know that the Packers rely on the Senior Bowl as one of their crucial kind of evaluation points leading up to the draft. And then every time they went on a top 30 visit before the 23 draft, they seemed to cross paths with each other. They did it in San Francisco. They did it in Green Bay. Then they end up being drafted here. And what I think is interesting is now they spend every offseason together. They split a Vrbo and move down to Florida for an extended period. And they're both facing really pivotal seasons. They both got new agents this offseason. They both are coming off years that, while they weren't bad, they both had a lot of drops, and they did not make a year two jump. So, yes, is it a mechanism to get more names on the list? Absolutely. But I think I get a little bit creative with doubling up, just like I did with putting Quay Walker and Devontae Wyatt together. So it may not be the most, shall we say, by the book. List. I color outside the lines a little bit, but I hope people are reading, and I hope people are getting ready for training camp, because there's a lot of guys on this list that are facing, you know, fulcrum type seasons in their careers.
Jason, you've evaluated a lot of players in all your years covering this team. What does Lucas Van Ness have to do this year in order for you to not call him a bust?
Yeah. He's obviously, let's start with production, right? Like, I mean, he's 2 years in, and we can talk about how draft status impacts expectation, but my word, like, he was only picked 7 picks later than A.J. Hawk was. And does everyone remember how everyone looked at A.J. Hawk?
Mm-hmm.
Like, A.J. Hawk constantly had to deal with, oh, you know, the 5th overall pick, and this is the production they get. I mean, you know, look, I think Lucas Van Ness, as he has explained to us this offseason, you know, playing with a broken thumb, which, again, no one gave Rodgers grace in 2022, and he was only the stinking quarterback. Mm-hmm. And the guy before him was, you know, the ultimate Iron Man playing through a broken thumb as a quarterback. But Lucas Van Ness was only rushing from one side. So there was a factor there. Obviously, we all know how important your hands are to your effectiveness as a pass rusher. But, okay, we'll give you some grace. There are some people that are giving, you know, Jordan Love a lot of grace for his inconsistencies last season. So we'll give Lucas Van Ness a little bit of that. But at the same time, like you got to get to the quarterback. Like it's, I love Moneyball, and when Brad Pitt is sitting with all those scouts, including the guy that was the pitching coach for the Madison Black Wolf during my career covering minor league baseball for the State Journal. One of the prospects they're talking about, he says, if he's a good hitter, then why doesn't he hit good? Right? Well, if he's a good pass rusher, then why doesn't he sack the quarterback more? Right? And that stands to reason with Rashawn Gary too. Like, I saw someone yesterday, I think there's this young guy, he's a hardcore Packers fan. He does a podcast. His name is Clayton. He put together like a 11-minute highlight reel of Rashawn Gary plays. Awesome. Great. That's awesome. I love it. But the fact of the matter is that for $96 million, he hasn't lived up to expectations, and he has not been in that elite pass rusher group like T.J. Watt, like Myles Garrett, like Trey Hendrickson. And so it's okay to say, look, I don't think Rashawn Gary's a bad player, but he needs to be more productive. And I think that holds true for Lucas Van Ness, and it's possible they might be together on the list that's coming up because they're both in the same boat too, right? Look, they're both top 13 draft picks who have not delivered as much production, both in terms of a pressure standpoint and a sack number standpoint. And if this defense is going to make the next step that they believe they are capable of after being a top five, top six defense in scoring and yardage, those guys have to be better than they've been.
Jason, Bill Barnwell's back with another rankings, this time ranking playmaker cores. That includes wide receiver, running backs, tight end. And the Packers, they've moved up a lot. I didn't realize that last year Barnwell had ranked the playmaking core for the Green Bay Packers as 28th in the league. I feel like they certainly outperformed that ranking last season. So this year they've climbed 11 spots, so 17th in the league. I know that we don't always know as, intimately the players and the playmakers for all of the teams in the league, but does 17 feel fair? You're doing the same thing with, the most important players for the season. Does 17 feel fair for you for the Green Bay Packers right now?
Yeah, Bill Barnwell does a great job. I don't, first of all, anybody who thinks my questions or my stories are long have yet to meet him because it's you better carve out some time if you're going to read all 32 of those rankings, right? That said, again, I you said it. I don't know the playmaking groups across the league for the rest of these teams. I know there's a lot of really good players on other teams as well. The fact of the matter is whether you rank them 28th or 17th, they were one of the best teams in terms of explosive plays last year. Look at the numbers. I remember this vividly because on our show, Tausch had no idea, and that's not a slam on him. It was the reaction that it got when I told. I think they were in like the top five or eight in most explosive plays last season, and it didn't. And here's the thing, and Chewy, I think you would agree with this. It didn't feel like it.
Mm-mm.
Right? That's the weird thing about it. And I don't know why that is. And this is, again, why statistics can be used to kind of do whatever narrative you want. Like, yeah, you could make the argument that they're one of the most explosive teams in the league, and you have the numbers to back that up. But the problem is, especially the way they finished the season with their head coach talking about how sloppy they were offensively, it just didn't feel like they were that explosive. But I don't know what Bill wrote, but I would argue that with the amount of young, but not that young anymore, experienced young players that they have on that side of the ball, they should be a big play, production-based offense. And again, here's another thing. Like, they were a top 10 offense statistically, but did they feel like a top 10 offense? I would say no. I mean, I would say that Josh Jacobs and their run game was felt like a top 10 unit. And then what did they do they go and they get Aaron Banks and they move on from Josh Myers and they shift Elgton Jenkins. You know, they didn't do that because they wanted to improve their pass protection. They did that because they want their run game to be even more productive, and they didn't think that having Josh Jacobs having to break as many tackles as he did last season was a healthy way to have their run game function. So, look, training camp's, what, a little over 2 weeks away right now? I mean, I cannot wait until we get to that. I mean, I would like to enjoy a little more downtime here first. But I'm really curious to see what this offense does because I think that Matt LaFleur and his staff, I wouldn't go so far as to say they were embarrassed, but I do think they were disappointed with this offense. And if they can live up to or surpass Barnwell's expectations for them, I think that would be a really good sign that they did what they wanted to do to fix what ailed their offense.
So a couple of things, Jason. One, it is a meaty read on the Packers alone, let alone all 32 teams, but it is pretty hefty the depth he goes into on these positions for the Green Bay Packers, detailing some of the challenges and struggles that the offense had, talking about the pieces that they went out and got. It is weighted. He does weight running backs heavily in this, so Josh Jacobs is certainly carrying the load here for Green Bay. But the thing that stood out to me, and maybe this is oversimplification, I will admit to that, but the Lions are ranked second and the Vikings are ranked sixth. And if we believe that this is a superstar league and we believe that these skill positions, these playmaking positions, matter and have a direct correlation to success and wins and playoff runs, that is what scares me a little bit. It scares me a little bit that consistently on all these lists we're looking at, the Lions, specifically the Lions, are ranked above the Packers as far as the number of playmakers they seem to have. And that, look, that's not, it's not always going to dictate success. Lions didn't win the Super Bowl last year, but it does mean the Packers have to go through a team like that. And then, of course, the Eagles are number one on the list, and we all know what the Eagles have in Saquon Barkley et al. So that's where I'm like, I get a little nervous about these preseason projections.
Look, Jen, you're 1,000% right on that. I totally agree. At the same time, I would say this. All those teams that you're talking about, they have guys that have done it, right? They've proven it. That's why they're ranked higher. I think the Packers have guys that could become those guys, but they haven't shown a consistency in that yet. And that's one of the reasons why I keep talking about, and I know I'm, you know, beating a dead horse here, but that's why I look at this season as such a fascinating year, because whether it's being eligible for an extension after the season like Wicks and Reed, or whether it's being in a contract year like Dobbs and Watson, whether it's Luke Musgrave, who showed those flashes as a rookie and has had his career derailed by injury after injury, whether it's Tucker Kraft elevating into the upper echelon of tight ends. They've got a bunch of guys that you see those moments, you're like, boy, this guy could be really good. But unlike Justin Jefferson, and unlike Amon-Ra St. Brown, and unlike Jahmyr Gibbs, they have not done it on a consistent enough basis where you say, okay, this guy's a stud, because I've seen him do it over the course of a 17-game season. Like, look at what Jaden Reed has done. He has led them in receiving each of the first 2 years of his career in the NFL. Now, did he have as much production last year? No. His numbers went down, and I think almost every category, and his drops went up. But I think there are the pieces there to have a bunch of guys where you're talking about that, but they have not proven it. And until they do, they're going to be behind those teams. I would say this about the Vikings. I am a big Kevin O'Connell believer. I think he is a really good football coach. I love his background as a player. You know, Chewy knows this. I'm one of my favorite people in every locker room is the backup quarterback. Doug Peterson's won a Super Bowl as a coach. Nobody can fix Jacksonville, so I don't blame him for that. But if J.J. McCarthy is able to do with him as their coach the kind of things that Sam Darnold was able to do, who had not had a great NFL career, then that's great that those guys are higher than the Packers. But it doesn't do you any good to have all those studs that you can throw the football to if your quarterback's not good enough. And so that's their prove it factor for this season. The Packers have a quarterback who needs to elevate his game, and he's surrounded by a lot of guys that have to elevate their games too. But I think there's a better than 50-50 chance that they're better than 17th in the league when we're done with this season.
Good stuff, Jason. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Have a great one. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, everybody. Take care. Be good.
Jason Wilde can be heard on Wilde and Tausch right after Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Monday through Friday here on 94.5 ESPN. Lakeland Supply is in the business to make your business better. Set up a free packaging and supply chain assessment at lakelandsupply.com. Yesterday on Wilde and Tausch, Jeff Passan joined the show, and he had some high praise for the Milwaukee Brewers. We'll get into that right after this on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
It's Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Though, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like a, oof. Like, just, instead of a, huh.
Yeah. But that's all part of taking the training law.
I do, but it's just such funny noises.
Did this get sexual or something? I don't know about it.
What the hell just happened?
On 94.5 ESPN.